present, or future. And we're going to be covering today the subject of acceptance. And acceptance is a nonverbal attitude toward another person. It has to do not with saying it in words, but more in actions, what you communicate to a person. And Henry Ford once made the statement, someone asked him, they said, "Do you believe in reincarnation?" And he made the statement, "No, but if I did, I wouldn't want to come back to this life unless I could come back and have the same wife." And I thought that was quite an interesting statement, and I found myself thinking, I wonder if my husband could say this about me. I wonder if our husbands could say this about us. Well, acceptance, what is it? The first thing is that it's an intimate, unspoken response between two people. Something like a smile, a squeeze of the hand, the way you listen. Things like that. One time I was listening to my husband after he'd had a hard day at work, and he went on for about 15 minutes. And then when he was through, I just said to him, "Well, honey, I can understand why you feel the way you do." And he looked at me and he says, "Thank you, that's what I needed to hear. That's all I needed." And then he told me later, he says, "You'll never know how much that meant to me. You didn't give me a sermon. You didn't tell me what I should have done, but," he said, "you just listened sympathetically, and then you said, I can understand why you feel the way you do." Well, that's a time I did it right. There are times I haven't done it right, too. But a Swiss psychologist by the name of Paul Tournier made the statement once. He said, as we go through life, we need three things. We need to be listened to, taken seriously, and understood. And, you know, when I read that, I thought, that's true in my own life. I want those three things from Jim. And I need to be conscious of giving those three things to him. Whether I get them in return or not, I need to be willing to give those three things to other people. And I've asked God to help me over the years that when I talk to someone that I give them eye contact, that I listen intently to what they're saying, because what they're saying is important and because they as a person are valuable. They're valuable to God. And they deserve to be listened to. And they deserve to be taken seriously. When someone says something, when your husband says something to you, you don't say, "Oh, that's a little thing. I don't see why that should bother you." That's not taking a person seriously. And then the third one, being understood, means that you take a little mental energy and you try to get into that person's shoes and feel what they're feeling. Hear what they're really saying, and realizing, reminding yourself that, hey, I haven't come from this person's background, and I have different strengths and weaknesses than he has, and I need to really work hard at understanding who he is and the path he's come through in life, and to not expect people always to respond like we do or to think like we do, because they're different. They've had different input, different things have happened to them. And that has helped. Then I think acceptance also is being patient with the failures and the weaknesses of our mate. It's so easy, isn't it, just to focus in on the things that are wrong, things we don't like. It's kind of like if I took this Bible and I held it up like this, what would I see? I wouldn't see you, would I? I'd see this Bible, and that's all I'd see, just right there in front of my face. And it's so easy in marriage to do that. We get one thing about our mate that bothers us, and it gets right up here like this, and we don't see all of this that's out here. We miss so much, and we need to turn that around. And just to, in fact, I know a couple that they ran into a few real conflict areas in their marriage, and they went to a marriage counselor, and he said, "I want you to do something." He said, "I want each one of you to sit down and write down all the strengths in your mate's life, the things you admire and are grateful for." So they did that. And then he says, "Now I want you to take this downtown, and I want you to get it framed. I want you to frame yours," he said to the wife and to the husband. "I want you to frame yours, and I want you to hang it over your bed," those two framed pictures. And he says, "Every time you get ready to go to bed at night," he says, "you just look up there and you review those strengths in your mate." And they told him later that that had really helped them to refocus on what was important. And I thought, you know, that's a good idea, just to learn to be grateful for the things that your mate does right and well, and the person that he is, and not expecting him to be something he's not. And that kind of gets us into the third one about refusing to compare. It is so easy to compare ourselves, our husbands, with someone else, isn't it? Well, if only he were more of a leader like so-and-so's husband. If only he were more outgoing. And we miss all that he is because of that comparing. And sometimes the ones whose husbands are more outgoing or more of the strong leader, they're not near as good with their children. They're not as sensitive in other ways. So, you know, they're giving and taking as we go through life. That's why we're never ahead when we compare. Let me just go back just a bit on being patient with the failures and weaknesses of our mates. I wanted to just give you a little illustration on that because I think it tells exactly what we're talking about here. One Sunday morning, Jim and I had a conflict. And by the way, Sunday mornings were, for a long time, not the most pleasant mornings for us. Everybody was up trying to get ready to go to church, and I was trying to get the cereal boxes out and the milk and everything out for breakfast, and trying to get the children, three little children, ready. And my husband wasn't helping me on this. He was up at his desk working on his Bible study or something. And then he'd get upset because I didn't have all this organized and getting us out the door on time. And I'd think, well, if you'd help, you know, I might get out the door on time. So we just had this little, kind of this ongoing conflict over the years. And at the same time, I really wasn't the best planner. I wasn't thinking ahead on things and planning my time well enough, and he saw that. But I remember one Sunday morning as we were late going out the door, and we got in the car and we're on our way to church, and he whistled all the way to church some happy song. And I thought, what's wrong? I couldn't figure out what was wrong here. I was ready for this little sermon and I didn't get it. And he was so relaxed and cheerful all morning and all the way back. And as soon as we got lunch over with, I called him aside and I said, I am dying of curiosity. I've got to know what's going on here. You didn't get upset with me this morning for making us late again. And I said, what's happening? And he said, well, honey, he said, I decided that I needed to just love you and let God do any changing that he thought was necessary. And you know, that really touched me. I remember after he said that, I thought to myself, I will be on time next Sunday if it kills me. And you know, I was the first one in the car. And everybody else came out afterwards. And it's interesting, but I thought through on that. I thought, now, what made the difference there? And you know what it was? He was no longer demanding me to change. He was giving me the opportunity to be motivated to change just by receiving me as a gift, just by loving me. And his love caused me to stop defending myself and caused me to be motivated then to give that to him as a gift. It works so much better. It really does. And it has never been a major problem to me since then. There have been a few times I've been late, but there have been a few times he has too. But it is interesting how that was the thing that solved that problem, was his approach to me. And I think with our husbands too, to quit pressing in on the ways they need to change, if you'd only do this more often, and if you'd only do that, and if you'd just stop doing that. And they feel this constant pressure to where they're not allowed to do that thing as a gift. I mean, if they do it, they get no credit for it because it's a demand that should have been met 5 years ago. So there's no motivation there. But just to back off, and just to say, Lord, I am just going to love that man, and I'm going to let you do any changing you think is necessary. Whatever it is just bonus. It'll just be a gift. And then acceptance is excitement over the presence of your mate. And George Mueller, I suppose you may have all heard of him, but he ran an orphanage in Bristol, England for many years. A great man of God. And when he was 92 years old, he made the statement. He said, My wife never walks into the room but what I receive a fresh inspiration. This is 92 years of age. I mean, she must have been close to his age, and gray hair and wrinkles, you know, like we're all getting, but her more so. He said that about her, and I thought, there is something deep there that isn't just... Oh, Florence, you ruined the whole thing. Now, I have to say, he was a very alert man at that age and was handling a broad responsibility. But you know something, that did not happen overnight. That was years of cultivation of a relationship. And that was years of being thankful for the mate God had given him instead of picking away at her. And I thought, you know, I want to be that way. I want to be that way with my husband. I want to be grateful for him, thankful, so that maybe someday if I live to be 92, when he walks into the room, there's just an inspiration there. But that has to be cultivated over the years. We have to work on that one. Well, what isn't acceptance? We've talked about what it is. Now, what is it not? It's not repression. It's not sticking our head in the sand and just pretending like the problem isn't there. That's running away from a problem. So we need to admit that there are certain things there that are going to get on our nerves, that are going to bother us about the person we're married to. It is not resignation. It's not just giving up and withdrawing from the person. It's not just saying, well, you know, he's never going to change. I might as well just accept it and just go on. That's an attitude of resignation. And then we withdraw from the person, and there's not a closeness there. And I know a Christian leader that did this. He's not living now, but he and his wife had several conflicts, and he decided that he was just going to travel. That's how he was going to get away from his problem. He would spend most of his time traveling, and he did. And the relationship went from bad to worse because he ran from it, he withdrew from it. And that is not the way to handle it. It is not necessarily approval of the other person. It's not necessarily approval of the other person. As we're raising children, one of the things that I was taught early was that you don't reject the child, you reject the behavior. Lest the child themselves feel rejected by you and feel that you don't love them. And I think the same thing is true in marriage, that a person's behavior may bother us, but we have to be careful that we do not withdraw our spirit from that person, that we do not hold back from them, but that we continue to reach out to them and to love and to serve that person and give to them, realizing that in time that behavior pattern may change, and it's certainly going to change a lot easier and faster if they have a warm, loving atmosphere in which to change. Then it is not necessarily neglecting constructive criticism. Not necessarily neglecting constructive criticism. Are we supposed to, is it 2:30 or supposed to be?
No,
4:30.
Okay,
good.
18.
Good, okay. I think sometimes, I've known a few women over the years that do not want to give their husbands constructive criticism. I have not been one of them. I've had to work on it from the other angle. Sometimes I can rush in too quickly and say something and not always say it in the right way. And so God has had to work on me from that direction. But I remember one woman whose husband had some glaring weaknesses in the way he dealt with other people and with her. And someone told her one day, they said, do you ever talk to your husband about that weakness? And she says, heavens no. She says, I would never tell him that. She says, if God wants to get his attention, he can send a prophet into his life, kind of like God sent Nathan to David when he had sinned. And I thought to myself, wait a minute. Nobody knows him better than you. Nobody could deliver the information to him in a better way than you if you pray about it first and you have a soft approach. And so I thought, you know, I want a balance there, though, Lord. I don't want to go to that extreme. nor do I want to go to the extreme of, you know, killing a fly with a sledgehammer instead of a fly swatter. You can go either way on that. So help me somehow to find a balance in that. And I think what God wants us to do is to work on an approach when we do have to offer constructive criticism, and we can say something like to our husband, "Honey, you really said the right things tonight. I felt like your thinking was clear, and it was direct, and it was exactly what was needed in that situation. And the only thing, honey, is that, you know, if you could just say it a little more softly, a little more patiently, but what you said was good." So that we don't just hurt the person in the process, but that we learn to say it in a loving way. And that takes mental energy. It's much easier just to snap something out, isn't it? But then sometimes it takes a long time to bind up that wound and heal it. And it would be better to take a little time in the beginning to say something in the right way so that we don't hurt the other person unnecessarily. Well, why aren't we accepting? I think one reason is that we are looking to the wrong source for our security. Jeremiah 2:13 says, "My people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the spring of living waters, and they have dug for themselves cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water." Cistern is a well. And he said, they're going at this the wrong way. They're trying to find their own way, and it's breaking down. It's not holding. It's not working. And we're not really looking to God as our source of security in our lives. We are maybe demanding something from our husbands that the husband can't give at that time. And because they can't give it, then we become critical of them. And we have felt hurt, and so we in turn want to hurt. It's a broken cistern. And I really feel in my own life that if I will let God be my security, and that even legitimate needs that I feel, if others can't or won't meet those needs, that I can learn to go to God and say, "Lord, will you be my security in life? Don't let me make demands on other people." Then I think other people's mistakes won't bother me so much. I can handle it then, because there's an inner security that God is meeting the need for that. And then we're not accepting because we haven't received ourselves. And I think there's a lot of truth in this. Sometimes we go through life with kind of an inner anger, and we're angry at something that happened to us, or we're angry at the way we are. We don't like our hair, we don't like our nose, we don't like our parents, whatever it is. It could be any one of many things. And there's this low-grade anger, and you know, ultimately that always goes back to God. It has to. It always ends up right at God. Even if we're angry at another person. Usually in my life I can trace it back to God in my attitude toward Him. And to be willing to say to God, "Lord, I'm focusing on the wrong thing. I shouldn't be focusing on these things. You chose this for me, and I am refusing to accept what you have chosen. And there are things that you see that I don't see, and that's why you chose it to be this way." Wrong values. Then we're not accepting sometimes because of guilt and resentment and an unsurrendered will in our lives. Guilt, resentment, and an unsurrendered will in our lives. There are things that we feel guilty over, and when we are harboring these things in our own lives, it's very hard for us to be accepting of other people. It really is. If we can't get these things cleared out, this debris cleared out of our own lives, it hinders us from having a free flow of communication and acceptance with someone else in our lives. In this case, our husbands. Unsurrendered will. And that means like fighting God on something. That is something that God, a burden God has asked us to bear, and we're not willing to bear it. we're fighting on something, or we feel that God should have had given us this thing. I talked to a girl a couple of weeks ago, and I think she has a real struggle with God, because God gave her a wonderful husband, but she is angry because she felt like she got married too soon, and she didn't get to travel, and she didn't get to spend as much money as she wanted to spend, and now she's tied down in marriage and can't do those things, and there's an anger there. And she's married a great guy. And I said to her, well, look what God has given you. I said, there are a lot of girls who'd love to have your husband. Well, I know, but... And she can't take that. She just has to keep refocusing back on what she feels she didn't get in life. So there's an unsurrendered will there. I shared an illustration in the workshop this morning that I want to just mention again. In one of C.S. Lewis's books called The Boy and His Horse, there's a horse in that story by the name of Bree, B-R-E-E, and there's a lion, as in all of his stories, and the lion is a picture of Jesus Christ. And Bree is always a little afraid of this lion called Aslan, and so she keeps her distance from Aslan. And about halfway through the book, there's a real change there, and one day she goes running up to Aslan, and she says, Aslan, I would rather be eaten by you than fed by somebody else. And I thought that was so beautiful. I thought, that is it. In the Christian life, God doesn't say, you can only accept me, you can only submit to me when you understand me completely. There's always a certain amount of risk there, isn't there, in love. We have to be willing to risk something. And finally, she had reached the point where she was saying, I still don't understand everything about you, Aslan. I still have questions, but I'm willing to take a risk, because to go any other way is going to be far less than what I want in life and need, and I'm going to go your way even though I don't understand completely. And then, of course, once we let our guard down and we allow God to really move into our lives and to work on the areas that need working on, there's a great release of freedom. And I've experienced this in my own life recently, just in regard to my 17-year-old son, who is not walking with the Lord now. And I've had many tears over that. I have prayed and prayed and prayed and waited and waited. And I have finally I've come to the point where I'm able just to leave that with God and say, Lord, I don't know what the future holds. I don't know what's going to happen. But I'm just going to look to you. I'm just going to keep my eyes on you, and you take over. You do it from here on out. I've tried to push buttons for too long. I just want to trust you. And you know, when I was able to finally do that with my emotions as well as my mind, I've said it many times, but finally there came that place to work. I could just do like that. It's amazing the peace that just swept over me. Nothing is different. Nothing has changed yet on the outside. But inside of me, something has changed. God has given me a peace without even seeing any light at the end of the tunnel. But it's okay. It's in His hands. A surrendered will. Well, why is acceptance important? Why is it such an important thing? And I think one main reason is that it works character qualities into our lives. Qualities of patience, qualities of meekness. Dr. Charles Stanley talks about brokenness in our lives. And I really believe that unless we experience a certain amount of pain and struggle in our lives, there is a stubbornness in us that is not going to give way. We are not going to be people who are humble and are broken and are compassionate, the kind of people that will allow God to do whatever He wants through us. And somehow that takes pain. 1 Peter 4:1 says that he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. It almost sounds mystical, but somehow that's the way it works. That there has to be a certain amount of suffering and struggle in our lives to subdue that strong will within us that resists anything that we don't like. And where we finally come to the place where we can say, yes, Lord, whatever you say, I say yes. And that's what he's doing in our lives. He's bringing us to that point. And then it's important because it gives our mate the freedom to change as a gift, not a demand. And we've already mentioned this before. And Paul said in the book of, little tiny book in the New Testament of Philemon, in the 8th verse, it's only one chapter, he's talking to Philemon and he's wanting Philemon to do something for him. And he realizes with this man that he could pull rank because he's been like a father to Philemon spiritually. And so, and he's done enough for Philemon that really Philemon owes him something in return. So he realizes he could pull rank here, but he decides not to do that. And he says to Philemon, I could order you to do this thing, yet for love's sake, I request this of you. And I think that is what we want with our husbands, is not to demand from them, not to demand them to change, but like Jim did with me, to love me and then to give me the opportunity to choose to do that. And with that kind of freedom, then I'm motivated to respond in return. How do we become more accepting of our husbands? I think one way, we have to start first, don't we, by taking a hard look at ourselves. We have to start with Psalm 139, 23 and 24. It says, search me, O God, and try my heart. See if there's any wicked way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. So it's search me, not search my husband, but search me. And asking God to begin there. I once lived with a girl in Los Angeles. In fact, I lived with seven other girls in a big house. And there was one girl in this house that was very obnoxious. She was difficult to get along with. She was very strong-willed, very highly opinionated. And I just felt like we just kind of butted heads on things. And I remember one day I decided that I was going to pray for Joan until she changed. And I decided no matter how long it took, every day after I got home from work, I was going to go up in the attic where nobody ever came, and I was going to spend 15 minutes in prayer for Joan so God would change her. And I did this for about 3 weeks, and finally after about 3 weeks, nothing, I mean nothing had changed. And I said to God that day, I said, Lord, I don't understand this. I have prayed faithfully for 3 weeks and nothing is happening. You are not changing Joan. And the thought just kind of came into my mind, why don't you ask me to change you? And I know that was God speaking, but my immediate response was, I'm not the one who needs it. Oh dear, how blind. And I mean, it was so obvious that she was the one that needed it. But the thought persisted. I couldn't get away from it. And finally I says, okay, Lord, I don't understand this, but if you want me to pray that way, I will. And so I began to pray every day that God would change me. And you know, an interesting thing happened. He began to feed ideas into my mind. One was, why don't you go in every night before she goes to bed and give her a little back rub because she has a bad back. Well, my first thought was, I just want to do that. I thought, well, okay, you know, if you want me to do that, Lord, I'll do it for you. Not for her, but for you. And so I started going in every night, giving her a back rub. And you know, she began to melt under that. She was a very hard person. And she began to melt under that. And this continued for 2 to 3 months. I'd do little things here and there, not in obvious ways, but just little things for her. And after a couple of months, she moved out of the home. They had a going away party for her. And at this party, we gave her a gift. And she came up to me that evening and she said, Jerry, after everyone else has left the room, will you stay for just a minute? And I said, sure. So I stayed, and she, after everybody was out of the room, she came over to me and she handed me a gift and a card. And I said, what's this for? And she says, this is just a small expression of how much your friendship has meant to me these last 2 months. And, you know, that was very humbling to me because I knew that my attitude wasn't always the best in that. I was just doing it because I felt God was telling me to. But it really taught me a lesson, and that was that other people change best in an atmosphere of acceptance, of loving acceptance. and this is what happened in that case. Then how do we do it? We learn to be accepting of our mates by checking first to see if everything is forgiven. Is there anything we have not forgiven another person for in our lives? Maybe something we've shoved under the rug, I don't know. But is everything taken care of? Everything up to date there? Hebrews 12:15 says that we're not to let any root of bitterness spring up in our relationship with others, and thereby many are defiled. So just to check into that. And then, how do we do it? We do it by saying yes to God, by thanking Him for the situation in which we find ourselves. Thank Him for that hair, that nose that we wish was shaped differently, that skin, that lack of ability that we wish we had, that 100 IQ that we wish was 160, or whatever it is. Any limitations. For our parents, whatever it is, to say yes. You know, the Gaithers have a beautiful little song. It's called Yes, Lord. And the first time Jim and I heard that on tape, we found ourselves thinking, well, that's a crazy little song. All they say is yes, Lord, whatever you say, I'll say yes. Yes, 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 yes. It goes on and on like that. And it uses the word yes over and over again. And when we first heard it, we just thought it was rather ridiculous. But the more we got to thinking about that song, we thought, you know, there is a real message there. God is trying to teach us that as we go through life. Instead of putting on that emergency brake all the time, He's trying to teach us to say yes to Him. Whatever you say, Lord, I'll say yes. Do you want to give me a rebellious child? Yes, Lord. You want to give me a husband that's difficult to communicate with? Yes, Lord. That doesn't mean we can't grow and learn better in these situations, but there's a basic attitude there that I know in my own life God wants, and He wants... In fact, I have to tell you this. I took a little card about so big a few weeks ago, and I wrote the words, Yes, Lord, on it in big letters, and I scotch-taped it to my bathroom mirror just to remind me that every morning as I start out the day, okay, Lord, I'm heading into another day. Help me all day long to say yes, Lord. I need reminding of that. And that's why I put it on the mirror. Sometimes we have to do little things like that just to keep us thinking in that direction. And then we learn to be accepting by receiving our mates as the exact person who can complete me in positive ways, but also in negative ways. The sandpaper again. And God has used Jim and me as sandpaper on each other many times. Jim told me one time, he said, you know, he says, there are a lot of reasons I'm glad I married you, but he says, one reason is because in a certain area of my life, he says, I can't fail. And he says, it's this very area where I need you to be something you're not. And he says, I get irritated with you for not being, making up that area for me where I need you to be strong. And he says, because it makes me look like I'm failing. And he says, God designed it that way perfectly. He says, so that I can't hide. And he says, I don't like to fail. And he says, God knows I need that in my life. And we could turn that around. There are things about Jim that I have chafed under. And I thought, well, you know, this doesn't help me for him to be this way. And God has shown me that there's an attitude in me that's being exposed because of that weakness in Jim. And God is just using that weakness to put that spotlight on me so that I'll come running to Him and say, Lord, I am really not a humble person. I needed to see this. I don't like seeing it, God, but I needed to see this in my life. Jack Taylor, I don't know how many of you have heard of him, but he said that for years he had a real struggle in their marriage. He was not a communicator, and she was a constant talker. And he said the more she talked, the more he wanted to just get out and take long walks and get away from it. And he said, one day God spoke to him and he said, Jack, you are not receiving your wife. You're not accepting her as she is. And he says, well, Lord, if she wouldn't talk so much, I could receiver a little better. And he said, God just persisted with him, and he says, that is not the issue. The issue is you are not receiving the gift I've given you. And he said, the more he thought about that, the more he just had to repent before God. And he said, he went to his wife and he apologized for not being a more accepting person with her, and that he just wanted from that point on to accept her exactly like she was and just to love her. And he said when he began to live that way and communicate that to her, he said something in her just settled down. She didn't have to scratch for his attention all the time, and she just began to bask in that atmosphere of acceptance. And he said then she felt less of a need to dominate the conversation, and they began to blend together into a beautiful marriage. But God had to get his attention on that. There's a little song, I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's not a Christian song. I heard it when I was in high school, and I liked it so much I memorized the words to it. But it communicates a real message. It's called Something Wonderful. I'm dating myself by telling you that. But there's some of you here that I'm sure have heard it. And it goes like this. It says, he will not always say what you would have him say, but now and then he'll say something wonderful. He will not always do what you would have him do, but now and then he'll do something wonderful. He's got 1,000 dreams that won't come true. You know that he believes in them, and that's enough for you. You'll always go along, defend him when he's wrong, and tell him when he's strong, he is wonderful. He'll always need your love, and so he'll get your love. A man who needs your love can be wonderful. And I just thought, that is so neat. You know, just being willing to bear with the rough edges and to appreciate what is there in them. And then the very last part on this that I won't take any time on is, tell God you want to look to him alone for your security and your significance. Tell God you want to look to him alone for your security and your significance. It's on your notes, I think. It's that last one on your notes. Tell God that you want to look to him alone for your security and your significance. It's under the house. It's number 5. I'm sorry, it isn't written in. That's right. Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's right.
Okay. Well, listen, it's been nice to be with you.